हरे चाचा भगवतो यावत्या पूर्वसेविता परिचाचः Service, Bhagavata, of the personality of Godhead, Yavatyaha, as they are prescribed, as above mentioned, Purvasevitaha, recommended, or done. By previous acharyas, taha, that mantra, hymns, hridayena, within the heart, eva, certainly, prayunjat, one should worship, mantra murtaye. Who is non-different from the mantra?
Who is non-different from the mantra?
One should follow in the footsteps of previous devotees regarding how to worship the Supreme Lord with the prescribed paraphernalia, or one should offer worship within the heart by reciting the mantra to the personality of Godhead, who is non-different from the mantra. Purport: it is recommended here that even if one cannot arrange to worship the forms of the Lord with all recommended paraphernalia, one can simply think about the form of the Lord and mentally offer everything recommended in the Shastras, including flowers, chandan pulp, conch shell, umbrella fan, and chamara. One can meditate upon offering and chant the 12-syllable mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Since the mantra and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are non-different, one can worship the form of the Lord with the mantra in the absence of physical paraphernalia. The story of the Brahmana who worshipped the Lord within his mind, as related in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the Nectar of Devotion, should be consulted in this connection. Get the Nectar of Devotion. Prabhupada says we should consult. If paraphernalia is not present physically, one can think of the items and offer them to the deity by chanting the mantra. Such are the liberal and potent facilities in the process of devotional service. What page?
94.
You looked it up already, yeah? In this connection, there is a story in the Brahma Vaivata Purana that in the city of Pratishthanapur, where's that? In South India. There was once a Brahmana who was not very well to do, but who was nevertheless satisfied in himself, thinking that it was because of his past misdeeds and by the desire of Krishna that he did not get sufficient money and opulence. So he was not at all sorry for his poor material position, and he used to live very peacefully. He was very open-hearted, and sometimes he went to hear some lectures delivered by great realized souls. At one such meeting, while he was very faithfully hearing about Vaishnava activities, he was informed that these activities can be performed even by meditation. What is the word that refers to activities in this verse?
Worship.
The word. The word. Put your hand up if you know the answer. Put your hand up. What's the answer? Purva sevitaha. No, actually, that's not it. Rasa?
Paricharya,
but she didn't put her hand up. Paricharya, yes. And what is paricharya translated as?
Service.
Yeah, service. Service. Is service important? Huh?
Most important.
Most important. Oh, yeah. If you're a devotee and you don't do any service, what kind of a devotee are you?
Lazy.
Lazy, yes. Yes, exactly. You're lazy. And show model. Yeah, show model. Show model. A devotee actually is measured very much. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada measured a devotee by external performance of service. It's very difficult to tell the internal workings of a devotee and then try to judge their advancement. Almost impossible for a layman. It can be an advanced devotee or a mature devotee, especially a Madhyam Bhakta, can tell by various symptoms, and the symptoms are described in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Nectar of Devotion. There are symptoms of advancement that can be recognized and identified by someone who knows those symptoms. But the measurement of advancement, the measure of advancement, is by and large, on the whole, determined or ascertained by looking at external features.
Self-motivated. Self-motivated.
Yeah, many things. There's 8 symptoms of bhava bhakti. 8 symptoms of bhava bhakti. One of them is don't waste time. Don't waste time. Likes to chant Hare Krishna. Humble. They're humble. 8 symptoms. Anyway, let's keep going here. I could find them, but we'll look at that later. So he heard. And maybe this is the verse he heard. Right? Where it says you can meditate on the service, and the meditation on the service is as good as doing the service. Because we can say, oh, I'm meditating on my service, Prabhu. Right, but how can you tell? How can you tell? Especially when it looks like he's asleep. And there are benefits of dreaming about doing service. Right? There are actual benefits from dreaming about doing service. But why was the Brahmana meditate? Why did he choose to meditate on performing service as opposed to actually doing the service?
Because he was a poor Brahmana.
Yeah, because he was a poor Brahmana. And so he didn't have the wherewithal to do the things that he would like to have done. So this is important here. And in other words, if a person is unable to actually perform Vaishnava activities physically, but most of us, how many here are so unhealthy that they can't perform service physically? half the brahmachari ashram. Right? Half of our brahmacharis. Don't bump into them, you could break a hand or two.
No.
Or maybe Mahatma. Right? Mahatma's now, how old are you now, Mahatmaji?
81.
Right? So, you know, when you get to that age, his feet are all falling apart. Right? Is that right? Yeah. My dad can't walk. 88. His knees are not working properly. Not working at all, pretty much. So, if we have the physical proclivity or the physical, you know, wherewithal, then we should act. Right? But in this case, he didn't have the physical. He didn't have the capacity, and so he heard. If a person is unable to actually perform Vaishnava activities physically, he can meditate upon the Vaishnava activities and thereby acquire all of the same results. Because the Brahmana was not very well to do financially, he decided that he would simply meditate on grand royal devotional activities, and he began this business thus. Sometimes he would take his bath in the river Godavari. Okay, so there's a clue as to where Pratishtanapur is, on the river Godavari. After taking his bath, he would sit in a secluded place on the bank of the river, and by practicing the yoga exercises of pranayama, the usual breathing exercises, he would concentrate his mind. These breathing exercises are meant to mechanically fix the mind upon a particular subject, that is, the result of the breathing exercises and also of the different sitting postures of yoga. Formerly, even quite ordinary persons used to know how to fix the mind upon the remembrance of the Lord, and so the Brahmana was doing this. So there's a common activity, fixing the mind on, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, because it's one of the principal activities of bhakti. When he had fixed the form of the Lord in his mind, he began to imagine in his meditations that he was dressing the Lord very nicely in costly clothing with ornaments, helmets and other paraphernalia. Then he offered his respectful obeisances by bowing down before the Lord. After finishing the dressing, he began to imagine that he was cleaning the temple very nicely. After cleansing the temple, he imagined that he had many water jugs made of gold and silver, and he took all those jugs to the river and filled them with the holy water. So we should take this, right? Dress the deities, clean the temple. Huh? This is part of, what is it? Karo harir mandira majanadishu. Then he offered his respectful obeisances by bowing down. Okay, so dressing the Lord or worshipping the Lord, bowing down, offering obeisances, then cleaning. After cleansing the temple, he imagined he had many water jugs made of gold and silver, and he took all of those jugs to the river and filled them with the holy water. Not only did he collect water from the Godavari, but he collected from the Ganges, Jamuna, Narmada, and Kaveri. Generally, a Vaishnava, while worshipping the Lord, collects water from all these rivers by mantra chanting. We do that, don't we? We're good. We collect it. Same thing, it's done by meditation. This Brahmana, instead of chanting some mantra, imagined that he was physically securing water from all these rivers in golden and silver water pots. Then he collected all kinds of paraphernalia for worship, flowers, fruits, incense, and sandalwood pulp. He collected everything to place before the deity. And we do that. We do that physically. He couldn't afford to. We have all of that paraphernalia here. Right? And so we bring it and place it before the Lord. After 5 o'clock, right? Then the everything is placed by the pujaris in front of the deity for worship. All these waters, flowers and scented articles were then very nicely offered to the deities to their satisfaction. Then he offered aarti, and with the regulated principles he finished all these activities in the correct worshipping method, which is something that we do every day. How do we know that everything's offered nicely to the deities to their satisfaction? How do we know that?
It's done according to the correct method.
And that's in here, in this verse. Purva sevitaha. And Prabhupada explains that. Here. It's not explained in the purport. It's in the word for word. Purva sevitaha, recommended or done by previous acharyas. So we don't make up our own process of worship. We worship, dress and offer, make offerings and do aarti according to the system of worship in each location. Basically according to the principles that Prabhupada has given us, but there are slight subtleties in the offerings. Slightly different. The way they do it in New Govardhan is different to the way they do it here. The way that we do it in Mayapur, for example, is different to the... depending on the deity. Especially depending on the deity who's being worshipped. So, the correct worshipping method is important. And it will be different in each location. So, you know, when we go to a different, each place, we worship according to the standards that are generally offered to the deities. And we know that's pleasing to Krishna. That's how Krishna is worshipped in that particular location. And we can judge by the results. How do we know that Radha Ballabha is pleased by our worship? How do you know?
Because the devotees are happy.
Yeah, devotees are happy. And the preaching's going on. Devotees are getting plenty of prasadam. They're generally pretty happy after that. But how do we know? How do you know that Krishna's pleased? Happy. Susukam katamadayam. How else can we tell?
When the spiritual master's
happy, or the deity worship minister's happy. He would daily execute similar performances as his routine work, and he did, and he continued to do so for many, many years. Prabhupada calls this puja, this is our routine work. Right? Routine work of the Hare Krishnas is to worship Krishna. So a good part of our day, from, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock in the morning, our routine work is puja and japa and our bhajan, basically. Even going on into the day. This is our routine work. It's a Brahminical culture. And we do it for year on year on year on in there. Then one day the Brahmana imagined in his meditations that he had prepared some sweet rice with milk and sugar and offered the preparation to the deity, which is what we do every day. However, he was not very satisfied with the offering because the sweet rice had been prepared recently and it was still very hot. This preparation of sweet rice should not be taken hot. The cooler the sweet rice, the better its taste. Although in Mayapur they serve hot sweet rice, don't they? Bengalis sometimes eat hot sweet rice. So because the sweet rice had been prepared by the Brahmana very recently, he wanted to touch it so that he could know whether it was fit for eating by the Lord. As soon as he touched the sweet rice pot with his finger, he immediately was burnt by the heat of the pot. In this way, his meditation broke. Now, when he looked at his finger, he saw that it was burnt. And he was wondering in astonishment how this could have happened. Because he was simply meditating on touching the hot sweet rice, he never thought that his finger would actually become burnt. Yowch! While he was thinking like this, in Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan, seated with the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, began to smile humorously. On seeing this smiling of the Lord, all the goddesses of fortune attending the Lord became very curious and asked Lord Narayan why he was smiling. Just like sometimes I'm thinking and there's an expression on my face and the Chinchuripa says, "What are you thinking about?" "Mind your own business." "Hey, what's wrong?" My wife often says to me, "What's wrong?" I think, "Nothing." So they're thinking, "Well, what's he thinking about?" Wives always want to know what the husbands are thinking about, right? But generally men think about nothing. So they're disappointed. There's got to be more going on, right? There's more going on in their heads than there's going on in their husband's heads. And so they don't believe it. The husband says, "Oh, nothing." They can't believe it. But it's true. Yeah. The Lord, however, did not reply to their inquisitiveness. Keeping the standard. But instead, immediately sent for the Brahmana. An airplane sent from Vaikuntha immediately brought the Brahmana into Lord Narayan's presence. When the Brahmana was thus present before the Lord and the goddesses of fortune, the Lord explained the whole story. The Brahmana was then fortunate enough to get an eternal place in Vaikuntha in the association of the Lord and his Lakshmis. This shows how the Lord is all-pervading. We think sometimes, "Oh, Krishna, why have you forsaken me?" That's what Jesus said on the cross. "Oh, Lord, why hast thou forsaken me?" But we should understand that the Lord never leaves his devotee. In spite of his being locally situated in his abode, this shows how the Lord is all-pervading in spite of his being locally situated in his abode. Although the Lord was present in Vaikuntha, he was present also in the heart of the Brahmana when he was meditating on the worshipping process. Thus, we can understand that things offered by the devotees, even in meditation, are accepted by the Lord, and they help one achieve the desired result. But that doesn't mean we don't do anything. We just meditate on our service. That's called dreaming. Yeah? We actually have to do it. Paricharya. Paricharya Bhagavato. Service of the personality of Godhead. Yavataha, yavatyaha, purvasevitaha, as they are prescribed, recommended or done by previous acharyas and in previous verses, right? There's descriptions in these previous verses, so it's referring to the recommendations that have been made. One chants Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Right? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. But it's interesting, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada mentions that there are many mantras. There are many mantras recommended in the Pancharatra. Right? But there's the Maha Mantra. There's only one mantra that's called the Maha Mantra. Right? And so, whilst we can chant, and there's certainly nothing wrong with chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, but we chant the Maha Mantra. And in that way, Krishna is worshipped, because Krishna is present in the form of the mantra. And because of his presence, then we offer everything that we do. This is why we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Because the whole idea is that we're Paricharya Bhagavato, we're offering our service to Krishna, and we invoke Krishna's presence by, because we know Krishna's everywhere, right? But we invoke it, because half the time or most of the time, very difficult for us to perceive the presence of the Lord within everything, even within the Maha Mantra sometimes. Right? We're chanting Hare Krishna and we think, oh boy, this is tough. Right? Chanting Hare Krishna is like chewing cardboard. Right? Usually because of offences, that's why. But we chant Hare Krishna, and you see it. When a person chants Hare Krishna without offence, then Krishna's presence is immediately felt. Or if not immediately, very soon will be felt. It's potent. Maha mantras, extraordinarily potent. And so when we're chanting, then, and chanting without offence, purely, in other words, clear, or at least in the clearing stage of chanting, then we become inspired. Right? When Lord Chaitanya was chanting, he became like a madman. Tears are flowing from his eyes, and so he went to his Guru Maharaj and he said, what kind of a mantra have you given me? Right? Makes me behave like a madman. And his Guru told him, this is the potency of the Maha Mantra. That whenever you chant purely, then you will be inspired, enthused. And so therefore it's mentioned, sometimes he laughs, sometimes he cries, sometimes he shouts. And we experience that. We experience that in, he dances. And he encourages others to chant. This is the nature of chanting, actually. When we chant Hare Krishna, we become enthused, right? And then we tell other people, you should chant too, Hare Bol. Well, there's natural symptom of a devotee that they'll chant and they'll be enthused. If we're not enthused by chanting, it generally is an indication that we're not chanting properly. In other words, offences are being committed. Well, or there's another problem. You know, there may be some other issues that need to be addressed. Interesting, in the example of the Brahmana, he was poor, but Atmarama, self-satisfied. He understood, I'm poor because of, it's Krishna's desire, and it's a consequence of my past activities, my past deeds. Right? So, generally when we're chanting and properly situated, you know, sometimes, and so this is why Varnashram is important. Proper engagement, proper ashram. If we're a little despondent, it may be because we're not doing the right thing that's suitable to our nature. Or our ashram is not right. That's, you know, but for most of us, that's not a problem. But these can be causes of disturbance. But once a person is properly situated and their ashram is correct, then when they're chanting Hare Krishna, they'll become ecstatic. And if they don't, then it's offences being committed. Huh? You know, that's why Krishna said to Arjuna, you know, fight. Because that's your, you know, that's what you should do. That's your service. Parichaja, Bhagavato, right? Interesting. We've got a spiritual treatise that's actually encouraging somebody to go out and kill people. This is a spiritual text. Normally we think, you know, we're not supposed to be out killing people. This is generally considered to be offensive, right? If you walk down the street, Swanson Street, like that fellow drove a car down Swanson Street killing people. Crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. Yet in the primer, right, the basic primer of bhakti, of yoga, what's Krishna doing? He's telling Arjuna, go and kill people. But that's not the principle is not that we should go and kill people. The principle is we should do what is natural to us, to our varana, to our occupational duty, right? That's the instruction, not go and kill people. That's the outcome for Arjuna, because that's what he's. It's like, you know, Krishna is talking to the governor or to the king or to the leader of the state. And so that's his responsibility, right? So, and so that's why Varnashram is important in the sense that do what you're naturally inclined to do and what you have the propensity to do. And then you'll be happy. Right? Just like when Rasa doesn't paint. Right? What happens? Yeah. Right. Get out of her way. Step aside, you guys. Right? So when she's painting, well, we don't see her, so, you know, we don't have to get in her way. But she's doing what she's naturally, endowed with. The creative process is exciting. It's exciting to watch. We used to see it with Korma when he was going to cook. There's a big festival on, and he's going to cook a feast, right? And then everybody had to be focused on cooking that feast. Otherwise, watch out. I remember sometimes there'd be a big catering event on. I'd be in my office, and Korma would be busy working on his lists. You know, when Korma was working on the great transcendental adventure, when you went into his office, it was just the bookcase was just plastered with lists everywhere. That's why I have the joke. You know, Korma said, never be listless. Right? Never be listless. So, although listless, it refers to the list of a boat, actually, listless. Because if a boat is listless, it means it doesn't have a wind behind it. You know that? Because when a boat has a wind behind it, then it's leaning over. That's a list also. So anyway, it's a play on words. So when we're actively engaged in devotional service and we're engaged according to our natural propensities, in the right ashram, then we'll become happy, we'll become ecstatic by the proper chanting of Hare Krishna. By the proper chanting of Hare Krishna, even if you're not properly situated, you'll become happy. But just in general principle is, be engaged situated in one's ashram, and then we chant Hare Krishna free from offence, then we will naturally become blissful. This is the process. Just like we were talking to some young devotees last week, and they were saying, when I come to the Hare Krishna programs, when I come to urban yoga, I go away with such a happy heart. I go away with such satisfaction that I know I'm doing the right thing. Huh? It's good to hear that from people. These are people who are not regularly chanting, but they're in the association of the devotees. They chant Hare Krishna. They hear the philosophy. They take prasadam. And then what's the end result? What's the end result? Happy. Happy. And this is how Prabhupada says you can measure a devotee. Right? Because he's happy. And an extension of that happiness is that he wants, you know, if you're happy, what do you want to do? You want to share it with others. No? So this is why the devotees encourage others. Chant Hare Krishna. Do service to Krishna. If you want to be happy, this is how you're happy. By Pari Charya Bhagavato. How? According to the system of the previous acharyas. Right? Not that we just make up some speculative thing. Right? But we apply the process. Ta mantra hridaye naiva. Chanting the mantra of the person that we're worshipping. And so for us, here it's mentioned Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. But for us, the Maha Mantra is sufficient. The Maha Mantra is more than sufficient. It's the Maha Mantra is overflowing with spiritual potency, power, shakti, right? What is it? Sarva shakti. All of Krishna's potencies are invested within the Maha Mantra. So long as we're connecting to it, if we're committing offences, which are attachments to anartas, basically unwanted things, anarta means that which is necessary, right? We need water, we need earth, we need fire, we need all of those things. Right? But there are some things, and they're essential, but there are many things that are inessential or non-essential. That's called anarta, things that we don't require, but we become attached to unimportant things that we put a great deal of importance on. But because of that attachment, then it blocks our... We're putting our attention on things that we really shouldn't instead of putting our attention on Krishna. One of the reasons why we don't want to look at Krishna is because he's pointing out that's an anatta, you should give it up. We say, oh no, too hard. Right, so being attached to Krishna sometimes means little austerity, a bit of pain. Means giving up things that you don't really need and focusing on the essential. And of course, maybe a little bit of, there's that saying, no pain, no gain, right? So it requires a little bit of spiritual bodybuilding, and that means freeing ourselves of attachments. And if we're able to do that and focus, turn our attention on the Maha Mantra, then all of our service will have meaning, and all of our activities will despite the austerities required to perform them, they'll have a positive outcome in that we'll make spiritual advancement. We'll make progress in our, and of course we'll eventually become happy. It's interesting, isn't it? We can actually become happy by giving up the things that we think will make us happy, because we're focusing in the wrong place. So we need to do service. We need to do it in a way that's authorized, and we need to do it chanting Hare Krishna. That's what we can take away from this verse. Pretty easy, yeah? And even if we can't do it, no harm in making plans or you know, thinking of meditating on how to do it, or even meditating on doing it. But generally speaking, whilst there is benefit in the meditation, our success will be determined by the practical application, the practical paricharya, service. Right, we've got to do service. Not that we meditate on doing service, because that can be very easily just daydreaming or actual dreaming, sleeping and dreaming. Right? Okay, does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? No. Meditating, huh?
This verse talks about following the footsteps of the previous devotees regarding how to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When we hear so many different examples from Srila Bhagavatam, when Guru Maharaj goes to the forest, meditates, and he follows the instructions of Narada Muni, and again, he, the Brahmana, didn't have the means, but he meditated in his mind upon this service. But again, these are the examples, but we always, Srila Prabhupada always comes back to what is practical in this age, what we really should do with this, should chant meditation with the Maha Mantra. I just have a question. Why don't we have a regular classes on Japan and Chaitanya, where the practical examples of previous acharyas or the Lord Japan, so we can understand how we can practically act in this age?
Good question. Well, we could. There's no reason why we couldn't. It's just time. When will we do it? But it's a good idea. I tell you, I encourage people to read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. If you've read the Bhagavad Gita, and you know the basic Bhagavad Gita philosophy, and you're studying the Bhagavatam, and you're doing that systematically, that can take quite a while. But I'd highly recommend everybody read the Chaitanya Charitamrita at some point. Just read it, because it's such a wonderful book. And my personal experience is that when I read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, then I understood what ISKCON was all about. Or maybe not all, but I had a deeper... See, in the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita gives us the basics. The Bhagavatam... The Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, because the Vedanta Sutra is a sutra is a very concise, minimalist explanation of basic spiritual principles. Right? Very difficult for anybody to understand. That's why there are commentaries. But the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which gives us the basic principles of spiritual life, is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's exemplified by the behavior of all of the persons that are mentioned in the Bhagavatam, and especially the residents of Vrindavan, and especially the gopis, and especially Srimati Radharani. So, because they're the personification of bhakti, right? And the personification of those principles of Vedanta Sutra. Those principles applied in the context of the Sankirtan movement are described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And so it is very specifically focused on what we do in ISKCON, right? In the current age. So that's why the Chaitanya Charitamrita is such an important book, because it shows the Lord himself putting those principles into action in the context of the Sankirtan movement, which is what we're doing. So that's why it's so important. We could have, I guess we could have classes on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Why not? Not that we, why don't we? Yeah, we're doing other things, I think. We're having a Bhagavatam class, which is what Prabhupada, by his example and by his instructions, advised us to do, and Bhagavad Gita in the evenings, but people generally busy in the evening, so we don't have those there's more that the discussion of the Bhagavad Gita is actually going on in people's houses when they have programs, and we're discussing those activity, those principles elsewhere. So it is going on, but in a different context and in a different location. So we could stop now and have a Chaitanya Charitamrita class if you want. But yeah, it could do. Chaitanya Charitamrita is an amazing book. Bhagavatam is amazing. It's all amazing. Yeah, we could do.
Before Mangalati,
yeah. That would be probably a meditational activity. That's something that we... Philip, you had a question?
Oh, yeah, two questions.
Two questions? Let's have the first one.
Someone else is waiting also.
Yeah, that's... I'm aware.
So you mentioned before that sometimes we don't feel enthusiastic by chanting.
Sorry?
You mentioned before that if a person does not feel enthusiastic while chanting,
yeah, it
is because he's either committed offenses or because he's not properly situated in his vana or his ashrama.
Mm.
So you see, is that most likely it's not the ashrama, but maybe the vana, like the occupation we're doing. But often in ISKCON or in Melbourne, we don't really do like what's our nature, we just do whatever's required.
In the beginning, you can't do that for very long. About what?
I have a feeling that, you know, being brahmacharya means to do whatever is necessary.
Brahmacharyas are different. But even then, as a person gets older, even as a brahmachari, better that they do what they like or what they're naturally inclined to do. Otherwise, it becomes too stressful. They'll have mental health problems. We've seen it for many over period of our lives, we've seen it, experienced it. But you know, at age, how old are you?
22.
Yeah, you're still young enough to do the needful. But look, you're happy. See, because there's a Brahminical aspect to what we do and our preaching. And also there's a devotional aspect. A devotee is slightly different because they know this is pleasing to Krishna. And so they accept that austerity for Krishna's pleasure. Right? And gradually as we mature and as we get older and as we expand our natural skills and talents in Krishna's service, then we work it out with the other devotees what's best for us to be doing. We work it out. If you're in a community of devotees where there's some some discussion about these things, some appreciation and some reflection amongst the devotees is what we should do, then we generally engage people according to, you know, their natural propensities. But each one of us from time to time does stuff that, you know, like we clean things, right? For example, I clean my office, I clean my desk, I clean my bedroom, right? I don't like it, I prefer somebody else did it. My mum used to do it, and she's not around to do it anymore, so I do it. We do things, you know, but those things, actually, generally speaking, they're also brahminical. Cleaning is brahminical, right? Austerity, performing austerity is actually brahminical, mode of goodness. Maintenance is very much in the mode of goodness. So we do those things. But we do it with the proper understanding that it's pleasing to Krishna. We do it for that purpose. But, you know, within ISKCON, we have... What do we do? As in terms of occupation, what do we do in ISKCON? Yes, hospitality. Right? We're in a hospitality industry, if you like. Right? We look after Krishna's house. And when Krishna's guests come, what do? Oh, welcome, come in. Have some kirtan. Have some darshan. Have some pravachan. Right? Have a nice seat. Have something to eat. Right? So we're into hospitality. That's what we do. That's brahminical culture, actually. Feeding people, giving knowledge, giving. And so we clean things. We organise events. We marry people, for example. We have festivals where we, you know, line people up. We organise things. So it's done in such a way so everybody can participate. That's hospitality. Cooking, cleaning, welcoming people. We do some administration. Some of us administrate. So there's management involved in those things. We sell things. We're salespeople, right? We sell stuff. Prasadam. Books. So all of those things are done with a focus on pleasing Krishna. So we're interested in the pleasing Krishna bit, and sometimes we'll put aside our own pleasure for Krishna's pleasure. But we know at the end we get a far greater satisfaction out of doing that. That's called sacrifice. And a lot of what the underlying principle of everything that we do is yajna, sacrifice. Right? But generally speaking, you know, we try to, as we work, as we mature as devotees, as we mature as individuals, we should know by the time we're 30, we should know, and earlier the better, we should know what we are actually good at doing. Right? Because there's no point in trying to force a square peg into a round hole. It doesn't, you know, you can, you know, but generally not as good as a good fit, right? So that's why varna is important. And why Krishna didn't say, look, just surrender, right? And this is a very important principle of bhakti, actually. He didn't say, just do what I tell you to do. He said, no, do what's natural to you. Right? And that will be pleasing to me. So that's why varnashram is important, at least from the point of view of the individual. And making arrangements for them is important. I don't think that answers your question necessarily. But... Yeah? Chaitanya Leela?
Yeah, using regards to the question of just, because we know that the concept of seva is doing what is necessary.
Yeah.
But it can take us some time to understand that
No, but even if you're doing what's your vana, you're still doing the necessary. Right? Like, you know, every day I get a problem on my desk. And I think, damn it, another problem. Why don't all these problems just go away? You know, I'm doing what I like to do. How come I got all these problems? But very often, a devotee in ISKCON has to be prepared, you know, because everybody likes everything just to go perfectly smoothly and there to be no problems. Right? Who likes problems? But we're here to solve problems. That's what we're here for. And every day of your life is going to be a new problem. Or it's the same old problem. You know, got to get up, get out of bed, chant Hare Krishna. Huh? So we're always having to do the needful based on whatever our service is. We always are. Right? That's the nature of life. There's a problem. And according to your occupational duty, you solve it. Or you work through it. In fact, we are taught in management class, many problems are not solvable. They're just manageable. You just manage them. There's no solution to personality conflicts. You just manage them. There's a solution, I suppose. Shoot everybody. or you know, here's what happens. I'll give an example in ISKCON. We think, more devotees. Great. Everything will be great if we have more devotees. Right? But then you get more devotees, and then what happens? You've got more problems. Right? So what do? Get rid of the devotees? You can't get rid of the devotees because more devotees is better. It's good. But it means more problems. Because of, you know, and we're all individuals. You have your plan, I have my plan. He has his plan. And so sometimes, you know, they clash or they go off all over the place. That's natural. That's normal. That's good. That's not bad. That's good. More people means more personalities, means more desires. Right? So we're always going to have problems. In fact, Krishna tells us that in the Bhagavad Gita. I didn't mention this in class. Prabhupada says, the process is simple. Well, Prabhupada says, the process is simple. And we think, the process is simple. And so therefore it will be easy. But Prabhupada warns, he says, no, the process is simple, the application is difficult. And we think, come on. We misinterpret what Prabhupada says. We think simple means easy. But Prabhupada says simple, but not easy. And we miss that. We gloss that over. Especially when we chant Hare Krishna, we become so happy and we think, that's it. That's what it's all about. Being happy. Right? But then we discover that actually it's not all about being happy. Because, you know, life is punctuated by matras, pasas, kunteya, sitoshna, sukaduka. And even Krishna warns us, right? Jamna mitju jaravya di dukkha dosha anudarshanam. We need to see the difficulties, but we know that all of that is ameliorated by the chanting of Hare Krishna. But the chanting of Hare Krishna, free from offense and free from material attachments, and it is, Prabhupada says, it is within a moment one can be Krishna conscious and happy. Right? We know that. That's the potency of the Maha Mantra, the potency of the process. But, and if we do it, that we'll feel premananda, all of the time. Right? This is the potency of the Maha Mantra. But Prabhupada says, but in my experience, Prabhupada says, in my experience, this doesn't happen all of the time. And so that's why Prabhupada says, this is why we have the rules and regulations of deity worship. And the rules and regulations of what we do as devotees to keep us purified and to keep us moving forwards towards that purified state of Krishna consciousness where we're always experiencing Premananda. Whilst the Hare Krishna mantra can put us there, Prabhupada points out that in his experience, even though he's initiated people and they've taken to the chanting of Hare Krishna, we're not always on the Premananda platform. That's where we want to be. That's the ideal. But and we can get there. That's why the emphasis is every morning we chant the 10 offences. Because we know by chanting without offence, we'll be on that Premananda platform. Right? But why do we have to keep on reminding ourselves of the 10 offences every day?
No brains.
Yeah. No, I've got brains, but no intelligence. Right? No intelligence. And we forget. We go to bed at night and we wake up in the morning and we have to be reminded, chant Hare Krishna, but don't commit offences. Oh, okay, all right. I thought I was already doing that. The process is easy. The process is simple. And so therefore it must be easy. But we discover, what do we discover? The process is simple, but not easy. And so it needs to be done with great care and attention to detail. Huh? And so what does that mean? Every day we wake up and we have to do the needful. And we don't want that. We want, hey, come on, we want the easy process. When I first came to the temple, it was easy. You remember when you first came to the devotees, came to the association of devotees, and there was kirtan, and there was philosophy, and there was prasadam, and you went away thinking, oh, this is the best thing I've ever done in my life. I am so happy. Right? So, and that's the purpose of the morning program, actually, you know. We should do the morning program and then we walk out of the door after prasad and we go away, we're going out and we're thinking, oh man, this is so good. Right? Don't we? Isn't that what we do?
Yes.
Or we look out the courtyard and we think, oh no, the courtyard's dirty. Oh no, I've got a list of things that I can never possibly do in a day. Right? That's how I feel. I look at my list and I think, oh no, you cannot possibly do this. What do I do? Right? It's doing the needful. So that's why the emphasis is on our spiritual practice, because that's where we get the inspiration and the enthusiasm to keep chugging away, right? You know what chugging is? Chugging. Chugging is what a steam train does. You know, it just keeps on plugging away, keeps doing its service. And that's how you, this is how the Brahmana did that service for many, many years, right? It's mentioned. Many, many years before he stuck his finger in the pot and it burnt. Right? So an element of Varna and Ashram is, and its goodness, is steady application. Right? Steady application. And so Shanai, Shanai, this is mentioned in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Shanai, Shanai, Uparamed, that one has to apply oneself steadily, steadily to the process. to the austerities and you know, we want, because Prabhupada said, you know, the Bhagavad, in Lord Brahma says, every word is a song, right? And every step is a dance. So, you know, we want every day to be a festival. And it is, I guess, in one sense, right? We want everything to be exciting and like it's just an eternal festival. Because that's what Prabhupada says, just chanting and dancing and feasting. That's what we do, right? But then we walk out of the morning program and it's got to go to Crossways, right? Got to clean, got to answer the telephone. Got to teach the kids, little darlings that they are. So on the one hand, we've got all of the opportunities that come from our devotional practice and what we do as devotees, but then coupled with that is the working through the karma that we've accrued over many, many lifetimes and the reactions that we have to accept. And that's manifest very much in our varna, who we are, what we do, basically, and ashram, you know, the spiritual platform upon which we stand or sit, rest at the moment, knowing that that's always going to be gradually improved. But that's done by very steady application. And remembering Krishna. Because very much of what we do, it's the same. Like when I joined the temple, the devotees asked me, what did you do? What are you good at? And I said, well, I was a bricklayer. I was working on building sites. So I was laying bricks. And they said, well, actually, more a bricklayer, a brickish labourer than anything. They said, oh, great. We want you to brick up all the windows in the temple. And I thought, okay. I joined the Hare Krishna movement to get away from all of that stuff. Huh? So, you know, like all the windows that are upstairs, they were in this building, right? So one of my first services in the temple was brick up all of these windows. All those paving stones that you see out there, right? I was one of the two devotees who laid all of that, those bricks, those pavers out there in the courtyard. And I thought, man, what am I doing here? I wanted a spiritual life, not material life. But what I didn't realise was that they took my material life and they turned it into spiritual life. It looked exactly the same. What was different was what was going on in my head. The mood of doing it for pleasing Krishna. It's the same thing. But done for Krishna, it's a completely different thing. Huh? But we don't want to do the same thing. We want it just to be all bliss and love and happiness. And it can be, but that depends on that internal meditation, doing the same things. Right? So Arjuna was doing the same thing. He's a Kshatriya. But he didn't like it when he had to kill his guru and his uncles and cousins. He saw that as being material, but actually it was the same thing done from the spiritual platform to please Krishna ultimately. Okay, let's finish here. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Mahabhasaram Ki Jai.